This is CIUT, the Taylor Report, 89.5 FM in Toronto. And we want to take up the matter which has caught the world's attention, that the hero from the movie Hotel Rwanda, Paul Rusesabagina, has appeared in a court in Kigali, Rwanda. And the world is quite shocked because he is a Belgian citizen. He has been at liberty. He has become well known in recent years for speaking out about conditions in his home country of Rwanda. And the focus of the crisis around Paul Rusesabagina has had a lot to do with how it came to pass that he ended up in Rwanda, since he was visiting the country of the United Arab Emirates, and he was apparently traveling somewhere else. And this Belgian citizen is now in a mysterious situation where we don't know how it came to pass that he fell into the hands of the government of Rwanda, which is extremely hostile to him. And we're very fortunate. We have two members of the Bridge Builders organization, Rwanda Bridge Builders organization. And they are Pierre Claver Kinembuzi, pardon me, and Gilbert Windata. Welcome to you both for being on the show.
Hello. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
Now, Gilbert, I think we probably should start with you, if you would. Tell us, who are the Rwandan bridge builders, and why have they taken up this matter of Paul Rusesabagina?
Phil, first of all, we thank you for hosting us. And so if I can start and say who we are. So Rwanda Bridge Builders, it's a consultation framework. We have 39 Rwandan political parties and civil society organizations. So, and we are in exile for obvious reasons because of lack of the political space in our country. So, and we are just fighting for democracy, rule of law, and of course, respect for human rights in Rwanda. So that's who we are. We just came together to be stronger and make sure that our voice can be heard.
The Pierre Claver, if we could ask you, the Bridge Builders, Rwanda Bridge Builders, has decided to, together with other organizations, to make an emergency situation for the Rwandan diaspora and political opposition of the Rwandans to focus on and raise alarm about what has happened to Paul Rusesabagina. Can you tell us what has happened and why this is such a something that all Rwandans are speaking out about?
Yeah, yes, Phil, I think all Rwandans have been shocked by this abduction of Paul Rusesabagina, because among the Rwandan Bridges members, some of the members of the consultation framework have been saved by him when they were in the Hotel de Mille Collines. So I know some people within our organizations who have been saved by Paul Rusesabagina. So it's really shocking to see that he's in Kigali hands right now, and the way it has been done is really mysterious, as you said, but it's very illegal as well, because we know that Kigali kill people in Rwanda and outside Rwanda, or people who has different opinion from them. He's a target, especially when he's in a political or civil society organization. So everybody was shocked. That's why this emergency.
I'm glad you are underlining something which is also now going to become part of the discussion. The government of Rwanda, particularly the president, as he calls himself, he used to be, as I remember him, a Ugandan army officer. Mm-hmm. Then he was a vice president. And when people speak of Rwanda, actually they speak of it almost like his property. But he has changed the story, or tries to change the story over who Paul Rusesabagina is. At one time, it was agreed by everyone that Paul had acted to save lives. And you are saying that you actually know people who were in that hotel and were saved. Is that right?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's right. Most of us know a number of people who've been saved in that hotel, the Mirkolin.
Yeah. And it was actually, I mean, of course, it also has to be realized that, you know, the world was really concerned, and even the company that owned the hotel, they all acted together to see that these lives were safe. Mm-hmm. And now the government of Rwanda wants to change the story because they want to, I suppose, demonize him. What is their real problem with Paul Rusesabagina, and actually with organizations like yourselves, the Rwanda Bridge Builders and those who have had to leave the country? What is the problem with the leadership of Rwanda, if I could ask Gilbert?
Okay, thank you, Phil. Just to provide the context in Rwanda, the way it is with the current regime, so they don't really want or expect anyone to express his or her opinion freely. So it's like they really want you to be there praising everything they are doing. And if you have a different opinion, actually, that's what makes you a terrorist. So now, the point is this one. For someone like Paul Rusesabagina, so there has been a time, personally, I can easily remember it. So when in Rwanda, when the Hotel Rwanda was launched for the first time, so people in Rwanda were proud of that achievement of what happened in Rwanda to be in the spotlight of the whole world. So, and including the government people, they were pleased. It's like they were happy. They organized like a gathering whereby they can watch the movie together, and the whole government, the whole cabinet was celebrating. So now what the problem is now, the person who was portrayed in the movie as a hero turned to be someone who can express his opinion, someone who can say what is going on and condemn the bad things, you know, it's like the atrocities that the current regime continue to commit. So now, that's how Rusesabagina became, I would say, kind of controversial. The same people in the country who've been praising him sometime, so became now really the real enemies targeting him. So now the context in Rwanda, whoever can dare to express his or her opinion, whether in country or abroad, as my colleague Clavel said, so you become a target. You are in Rwanda, you are in the region, that's like in the neighboring countries, you are a target. So, and even if you go far away, like me who is now, right now in the United States of America, or Clavel who is in Canada, or others in European countries, so they become a target. So basically that would be the context of why all of us at a given time, we are a target only because of our opinions, nothing more, nothing less. So it's just our opinions.
Yeah. And the ability to even have an opinion, I mean, it is very striking that, of course, he is being accused of association with terrorism, blah, blah, those things. However, I'm not aware, and I'll ask Claver about this, I'm not aware of anyone being permitted within Rwanda or outside to voice a strong opposition. And by that, I mean political opposition. I don't mean resort to force or strike or any type of resistance. Is that an accurate picture of the situation of Rwanda? Claver?
Yeah, I think it's a good picture of what's happened in Rwanda. You're right. Nobody is allowed to oppose this regime. That's it. Even journalists, anybody who try to say something which, you know, contests what they are saying, he became an enemy of the state, an enemy of Rwandans, and, you know, the best place when they put him is in jail. If they are, people are rightly, they can escape and go away, like Gilbert, for example, and others. Because me, I was in Canada when everything started. But anybody who opposed this regime is a candidate to death or to jail.
Yeah. Well, we have inside Rwanda, we have a woman who's in basically under house arrest. She was not in Rwanda in 1994 during the war and the massacres. And she returned hoping to create a dialogue. She went to prison for some period of time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Victoire Ingabire. So Victoire Ingabire, and also a long list of all political opposition members that have been in jail or arrested or killed. It's like that has been somehow common in Rwanda. It's unfortunate, but that is the trend. So it's like whenever you have a different opinion, you need to be, you know, it's like you have to be either prosecuted, arrested, you have to go to exile, they try to find you to kill you. So, and unfortunately, even the head of state at a given time, it's like he was just in the public saying that, you know, they are saying that we don't allow people, you know, to express their opinions. And he said, if they don't have like our opinions, what do they have to say? So it's like you have to express his opinion. If not, you have nothing to say. So it's like the expectation is for them, you either sing our song or you keep quiet. So it's like there is no other song. It's just one song. There is one narrative. If you can't say that one, you either keep quiet or they try to make you silent. So it's unfortunate, but that has been a trend that we can see is, you know, going even beyond of what people have been expecting.
Yes. This is the Taylor Report, and it's CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm speaking to members of the Rwanda Bridge Builders Organization. And Claver Kanembuzi, Gilbert just mentioned singing is really only one song. If you're in the country, you have to sing the yeah. one song. And if you have another one, you could be your life in danger. We are referring to an actual singer, aren't we? I mean, they actually, a very prominent singer in your country who wanted to sing a song, literally a song of reconciliation of the various groups, the Tutsi, the Hutu, and the Twa, is dead. Can you tell us how he happened to die? I'll ask Claver.
Yes, Phil, I think you're talking about Kizito Mihigo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's this guy was really, for me, I knew him personally because I met with him in Brussels. And he's a brilliant young boy who really wants all Rwandan to reconsider it, and who used to say that, you know, every death it have to be considered in this country, not only death by genocide, but death by, you know, in the hand of LPF soldiers. This have to be remembered as well. So that's why he was targeted by this regime. And they killed him. You know, everybody knows that they killed him, and they pretend that he committed suicide. But we know that he has been killed.
Prison. He was in prison the same time as Victoire and the other woman, Dionne Wigara. We should mention her.
Yeah.
They were all imprisoned for basically contradicting the president, I guess. But now he had a particularly tragic end. He was accused of wanting to leave the country illegally. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And
yes, that's what they said.
They said he committed suicide. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But as you said, even the song, the political song that have to be, you know, sung in Rwanda have to be one. But even for the reconciliation, there is only one song. If you sing differently than what the regime wants, you have to be killed or, you know, you're a target. And that's what happened to this gentleman, Kizito Mihigo.
Yeah. And they actually feel, if you allow.
Yes.
When it comes to the death of Kizito Mihigo, what is really a very big concern is not just because he died or he was killed, but when you look to the whole process on how the guy has been persecuted, intimidated, harassed, and you know, it's like humiliated before the Rwandan public, a guy who was really highly known, respected by anyone in the country, just trying to bring him from the stars, actually he was a star, trying just to bring him down and humiliate him in a way that has never happened before, trying to take him before different audiences of people, different than genocide survivors, to say here is a betrayer, here is the bad guy, trying to humiliate him in many different ways, taking him to jail, and even from the jail, you know, he has been there for a couple of years, and then from the jail, the whole, you know, painful process of ending his life started again until they killed him. So it's like the process also does matter. It's like he was killed after a long process of humiliation, persecution, and so on. So it's really very sad. It's very sad and unacceptable.
Yeah. Well, and that's a part of the backdrop here to this present issue. And I would like to get both of your opinions about this. The way that other states, particularly powerful states in the West, but also neighboring states regard the government of Rwanda when Rwandans who are not within within Rwanda find themselves harassed, find themselves the targets of assassins, and the question of the international community being more demanding of that Rwanda respect international law, and I want to address this issue of how Paul Rusesabagina could be removed from a sovereign country, the United Arab Emirates, and without going in front of a magistrate. And I guess to focus it, the Belgians have rather disappointed us, have they not? I mean, this is one of their citizens. They were not asked to transfer him to Rwanda, or if they were asked, they didn't agree to do so. So what concerns me is where there people are talking about a possible trial, but his right to argue he should not have been transported there, and he ought to be, frankly, removed from Rwanda because Rwanda violated his right to argue against being transferred. That's a long, complicated question, but there is disappointment, isn't there, that other countries are not demanding that Rwanda follow international law? And I guess we'll start with Gilbert, your opinion.
Yeah, actually, we are worried, I can say, even on a high level. Let me say, for two reasons. First, there has been a time in 1994 genocide whereby the international community has been there, and people in Rwanda have been killed really on a very high number. That's why we talk about the genocide. So now the international community is somehow, because of the government we have now in Rwanda, so it's like the international community is somehow guilty, feeling, you know, it's like those people, we did not intervene. And the President Kagame, as well as his government, they are taking that chance, that opportunity to say, now, when we go out to find people to kill, keep quiet. It's like that kind of international community, the guilty of what they may have not done, the current government is taking the advantage, the opportunity to say, it's okay. Now, you kept quiet at a time whereby a million people died. Now, if we are killing, like, let's say 100 people, 1,000 people, just keep quiet. So that's why for us, you get, as you mentioned, you get a protection from the government that is hosting you. Let's say you get it from Belgium, like Rusesabagina. So now, the government of Rwanda tries to come, you know, they really try to do, to make your life as much difficult as they can, until they come, you know, to abduct you, take back to Rwanda. So as you say, unfortunately, at this time, when it comes to any kind of international law, international community, the government of Rwanda doesn't care where you are. So it's like they are criminals without borders. It's like when it comes to for them to make a crime, when it comes for them to target you, they're even taking oath in foreign embassies, in embassies in these countries. Even I remember even in the morning, I saw people in the Rwandan embassy in UK taking oath. It's like to run after anyone they consider to be enemy. And for them, enemy is just anyone expressing his opinion. So now the problem is, as you say, the current regime, they try really to grab that credit. They say that they stopped a genocide. And because of that, anyone who is a threat to the government, that means having a different opinion, they try to go wherever that person may be in the world, just trying to know, to intimidate, to kill, to abduct, to kidnap. And then, you know, they feel like for them, they are allowed to anything. So it's unfortunate, but we can see that taking place. And it's really unfortunate to see that happening.
Yes, and Claver, I mean, frankly, as Gilbert is saying, they've been given license by countries that are supposed to protect their own citizens.
Yeah, that's true.
Paul is a Belgian, whether anyone, you know, Mr. Kagame may not like that, but he's also a U.S., legally a U.S. resident. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be a toleration of this criminal behavior.
Yeah, that's true, Phil, because as Gilbert said, the international community like gave a blank check to Rwanda because they say that they stopped genocide, which is not true. For me, I think they participated in the genocide as well. But the fact is, our, you know, power state tolerated that. And I think you know that even in Canada, they tried to harass some people like journalist Judy River, for example, and they tried to capture her when she was in Brussels. You know, she was protected by Belgian security services because she was targeted over there. So they can. And I remember also that in 1998, I think they tried to kill one guy in Montreal, actually a Canadian. I remember that. I don't know if you remember that.
David Himbara, who lives in Canada, and once served as a very close executive assistant to President Kagame. He was told by the British authorities that he was the target.
Yes.
He was also warned right here in Canada that he had to be careful and that they were watching because they had information he was a target for assassination.
Yes. And so some guys in London as well, the British security services told them that they have to be careful because they were targeted by the Rwandan government in London, in UK. So they are really, as Gilbert said, they are killers without borders. So it's frustrating for us, but the fact is that one they are tolerated all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the voice of Kinembuzi, Pierre Claver, and we're also speaking to Gilbert Winadada in Washington. We should mention the case because I think our listeners should be reminded this government from the beginning has targeted Rwandans abroad. There was a case of Mr. Sendashanga in Nairobi, a cold-blooded broad daylight assassination. And then there was the case of Patrick Karegeya in South Africa, horrible murder in a five-star hotel where a friend had invited him for a talk and he ended up strangled to death. And the authorities in both countries, both Kenya and South Africa, said that the killers were Rwandan agents. Am I right?
That's right.
And, Gilbert, you remember Mr. Sendashanga? Why was he killed?
When it comes to Sendashanga, there was a time not long ago when the president was like bragging, saying, you know, it's like they are proud to have done it. They are proud to have killed him, saying that he's not apologetic for that, you know, they killed Sendashanga. So for the case of Karegeya, so I even remember during a prayer breakfast, it's unfortunate it was around the prayer, saying that, you know, even that anyone else, you know, it's like he was expressing his point that anyone should be expected to do similar things. So that means like, to kill or to target anyone who may be against the government. So actually, there is a very long list for us if I can take any country in the region, I mean, when you say Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, Tanzania, Mozambique, Zambia, wherever you go, there is really a list of Rwandans that have been killed by their government, by the government back home. So, and even when you go far away in these countries, these free world countries like where we are, so you see that there is that kind of fear, and also some incidents, you know, whereby they can say this one died in a mysterious way. And that's something when it comes to what they do, actually what they are doing against Rusesabagina, it's something that anyone who is a critic to the Rwandan government is going through on a daily basis. And even when it is not yet there, but that's something they talk about all the time, saying that even for you others, it's a matter of time. I'm quoting, it's not something like, that's what they say, it's a matter of time.
Yes.
A matter of time for anyone to die, a matter of time for anyone to be kidnapped like Rusesabagina and so on. So you can imagine what it means to be, to speak for human rights for our fellow Rwandans, to speak up for democracy and so on. And what I'm saying, unfortunately, it's in the reports, well documented in the reports, or the Human Rights Watch in the reports, or the State Department, the Human Rights report, or the State Department. So it's really well documented in many various reports how people are killed, targeted, and so on, and no one is allowed to express his opinion. So it's unfortunate for a country that came out of a genocide to be carrying out the same kind of actions that can lead back to another horrific, future for the country.
Yeah. We're speaking to representatives or members of the Rwanda Bridge Builders group. And by the way, you had a meeting, an emergency meeting on September the 6th, and you made a list of concerns and demands and called upon the international community and others. And I just wonder, and I think it's a great thing that you have the Rwanda Bridge Builders, and people just write Rwanda Bridge Builders, they can find the site. We need some international bridge builders, it strikes me, to join the Rwanda Bridge Builders. This issue of the Belgium, and I guess the states to be mentioned are Belgium, the United States, and United Arab Emirates. They haven't actually, the United Arab Emirates have not said anything in helpful about Mr. Rusesabagina. They say they had no knowledge of him. He came and he went, which seems a little disingenuous. But the New York Times wrote an article, which I think will be troubling to the governments of the United States and Belgium and Rwanda, because some leader official in the Rwandan government said that they were helped by Belgium. And they said Belgian intelligence congratulated them on having basically tricked Mr. Rusesabagina. And immediately Belgium said, no, we have no knowledge, we did nothing. But it seems to me it puts a lot of pressure on Belgium to do the right thing by Mr. Rusesabagina. And I'll ask, I guess, Clavera, start with you. It is a little problem here, isn't it? It seems unlikely that Rwanda did this on their own.
Yeah, I've seen that some Rwandan officials said many things about the helping that they got from foreign countries, but it's not really clear which one. For example, the Emirates say that they didn't help. Belgium said they didn't. It's still unclear, but for sure they got help because they cannot do that alone. It's not possible because I think a country like Rwanda, which is a very small country anyway, cannot do such a so sophisticated action alone. I don't think so.
Yeah, our citizens here should be demanding, in my opinion, we should be demanding of our governments, what is your relationship to this government? And would you tolerate the illegal removal? The focus has moved a little bit toward the idea of a trial. Mm-hmm. And I have to ask Gilbert, the prospects of anything resembling a fair trial seem to me rather small. Shouldn't Belgium and other states be asked for the return of Roussa Sabagina and to say, well, look, if you want Mr. Roussa Sabagina, because you say he's committed a crime, bring your case to our country where he's a citizen and make your case. That would be my question. Is Gilbert with it?
Yeah, right.
Is that a reasonable way to go?
Actually, thank you so much for asking that, because even for us in Rwanda Bridge Builders, we really had specific requests. And also want the international community to know what they can expect from the government of Rwanda. Actually, the fact that the government of Rwanda avoided any kind of legal process for Rusesabagina to be, to be brought to Rwanda. So it shows that they really did not have something concrete that they were, accusing him for. So that's why there is actually no one can expect any kind of fair justice when it comes to the judicial system of Rwanda against the opponents of the government. It has never been there and it will not be there for Rusesabagina. So now the point is, as you say, I would expect the government of Belgium to do something about the case, especially, and let me put it this way. Fortunately, the spy chief in the government of Rwanda mentioned them, saying that they helped. So now when they keep quiet, actually that's how to show how much they helped. Because if the spy chief, actually that's a challenge. I believe the government of Belgium is wise enough to stand up to the challenge.
Yes.
The spy chief said, this guy helped us. So if those guys continue to keep quiet, for everyone, it will be a proof that they helped. Otherwise, it's obvious to anyone that it is wrong. Mm-hmm. The way Rusesabagina was taken from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, so it was wrong. So now, if they did not help, if those foreign government did not help, this is the time to show it. This is the time, they shouldn't be saying, no, we didn't help. They should ask for the right thing to be done. And anyone know the right thing? There is the international law when it comes to the extradition. It's like the process is clear, which wasn't the case for Rusesabagina. So, for us, we are expecting Rusesabagina, if he is to be judged, in a country with a fair and independent judicial system. Everyone knows that in Rwanda, we don't have that. So those two governments, at least I'm sure for the Belgian government and for the US government, they know very well there is no independent judicial system in Rwanda. That means Rusesabagina cannot get any kind of fair, justice. Because when you say fair, justice is justice. It is expected to be fair by itself. So that's not what we don't have in Rwanda. So, and we believe that Rusesabagina can return to the country that gave him protection, that is Belgium. He needs now more protection than he needed, you know, that he needed it by the time he requested it. Now it's a proof that Rusesabagina needs more protection. Mm-hmm. Oh, they failed to provide it at this time. So even the one they have already been providing, in the eyes of anyone, it will be useless. Why should you protect me and not protect me when I need you most?
Yes.
Rusesabagina need them most right now.
Yes. No, that's very eloquent. I'm very glad to that point, because there's a subtlety there that I had neglected to point out, that he was originally a refugee in fear for his life, and the Belgians agreed that he was in danger and he was granted status. Then he later became a Belgian. So their government agreed that, yes, this man's in danger. Now he's in the clutches of that country, that government that Belgium said was a threat to him. It puts a greater burden. I notice too, and I'll ask Claver, that the Belgians have so far, to my knowledge, have paid him one visit, according to the New York Times, and it was rather perfunctory, where they put to him was, why are you here? And his answer was, I woke up in Rwanda. That, you know, if I was a Belgian, I'd think that doesn't seem quite enough. Something I would expect, maybe if I was a French stock Belgian or from the Flemish community, I might expect a little more help. That seems to be a problem, Claver.
Yeah, of course. I think he needs he needs help from Belgium and even the United States, because he's also a permanent resident of United States. And I know that in United States, some organization took actions actually to try to help, to try to convince the US management authorities to intervene. But in Belgium, I don't see anything happening, which is amazing, because he's a Belgian citizen. And as we said, they gave him protection when he asked for refugee status. So they should be the first ones to intervene and put pressure on the Kigali regime to release him without any condition, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing to see how they are. They cooperate with them maybe to bring him to Kigali. So that's the only reason that I can see.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the alarm has been sounded, I would put it that way, where now maybe one of the good things, if we can call it that, would be that the question is not so much an internal question to Rwanda, but a question to the international community, which has treaties, it has norms, it has United Nations, it has a recognition of sovereignty. The sovereignty that we're worried about is the sovereignty of powers that are not protecting the legal rights of refugees and even of new citizens. And I think we're blessed that we have the Rwanda Bridge Builders, because many, those who make up that organization, and I'll return to what the Rwanda Bridge Builders is, but in all parts of the world where we have the Rwandan diaspora, the question should be directed at the governments where they are located of what does citizenship mean here and what does refugee status mean? Because this government, as was said earlier by Gilbert, it has it's criminals without borders. That's a very good phrase. I mean, is Canada going to change its posture? Is Belgium going to change its posture? Because this case cries out for that, I believe. So I guess in closing here, I'll ask both of you, what is the, from your point of view, what are the bridge builders going to be saying? What do they hope for? I'll start with Gilbert and then Claver. What does the Rwanda bridge builders, what's the message to the diaspora and to Rwanda?
Thank you for asking that, because as you said, we are all over the world. So we are in many different countries of the world. And now the main reason why we came together, it's not only we want to fight for democracy, human rights and rule of law in our country, but it's also we are always under threat in different countries. In these three countries, Rwandans who came to seek asylum are not free. Unfortunately, the Rwandans who really need protection and who need asylum, those are the most persecuted. And persecuted by other Rwandans who came in this country who don't really need any kind of asylum, but who may come, you know, in and try to make fake stories. And through those fake stories, they are given a kind of protection which they don't really need because they have no problem with the government of Rwanda. They have what they call the Rwanda days. And when they come together, they are just celebrating with the same government. They say, you know, that, you know, they, yeah, right. The same government, they say that they was about to do harm to them, so they go and celebrate with it. So now, as you say, the message we have for us, members of Rwanda Bridge Builders, to those different countries, is just to raise their awareness and know there is a government right now in the 21st century, a government that is a threat to its people abroad. So now, for those government to do something, to me, being guilty of not being, you know, that you have not done nothing 26 years ago in the 1994 genocide, it doesn't make you blind against obvious human rights violations, human rights abuses that take place in the country and abroad. So that's what the government of RPF is doing. They are doing like killing Rwanda inside the country. The list is very long. As you said, there is Kizito Mihigo a few months ago. Before him, there were many others. After him, we also have a long list. But also, they cross borders. They cross borders to go in foreign countries, to kill, to abduct people, to kidnap, to do anything, many, really several things, to murder its own people. So now what I would say to all those Rwandans, it's time to say no. I know that even when you say no, it makes you a target of those people, but we cannot go on like this to say, you know, we just keep quiet for them not to kill us. Actually, whether you keep quiet or not, those people, for a small reason, they just come, run after you and try to kill you. So, and of course, our message goes to these powerful nations in the world to let them know it's not good. It's like, we really appreciate the assistance they have been providing to our country, the aid, development aid that goes to our country. But Phil, think about it, to take a private jet. For now, within, I can say within 1 year, at least we are aware of two Rwandans who've been kidnapped using private jets. Private jets to kidnap Rwandans. Now I say, how can a nation, a poor nation, receiving aid, receiving international aid, aid for development, is being able to afford the finances needed to kidnap people using private jets? To me, it's a contradiction. It's a contradiction. And the citizens of these powerful countries, they should also hold their governments accountable.
Yes.
Hey, you are giving our money, taxpayers' money, being used to pay private jets to take people like Rusesabagina, to take people like Sankara. So just, it's expensive. It's expensive. So that's why we don't really want to see the resources directed to our country being misused in a way that the recipient country cannot be accountable on how those resources are being used. So that's the message we can give to not only to our fellow Rwandans around the world, but also to our fellow friends in the international community, citizens like all of us, just to help us. Something is wrong and it needs to be made right. And we need your assistance. We need you to join us in that struggle.
Yeah, to do your duty, yes. Gilbert, thank you. And Claver, remind us again, the Bridge Builders is a wonderful phenomena. It shows unity I haven't seen in all the years I've followed this subject. Tell us again who the Bridge Builders are and how people can follow you.
Yeah, so Rwandan Bridges is a consultation framework of Rwandan opposition political parties and the civil society organization living all around the world. So in all the countries of the world, so we try to unite ourselves to make our voice unique and say no to this dictatorship and try to change, you know, things in Rwanda. I think our message to all Rwandan diaspora is that we have to be one to say no and try to make things change in this country. And we also, as Gilbert said, we need help for actually our countries where we live. So because we know that they have they can have influence on Rwanda. So we ask them to use their power to open their eyes, because what they are seeing when they talk to Kagame and his colleagues in Kigali, it's not the reality. The reality is they are dictators and they never say truth. So that's, we need really help from international community, from you guys, journalists and or people who can change opinion.
Well, Pierre Claver and Gilbert of the Rwanda Bridge Builders, we're very proud that we had you on the Taylor Report. This is a very urgent matter. The matter of Rusesabagina and your organization is doing, in my opinion, exactly what needs to be done. I thank you both very much for being our guest today.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Leah.
Okay.
Phil and Leah, we thank you so much for hosting, having us today, and we really appreciate your time and concerns for our issues.
Well, thank you both.